esoteric. RedIceCreations.com is where you will find more. If you've been listening to us for a while, you know that we encourage you to think for yourself. You'll know that we're not trying to tell you what the collective agreed upon truth should or shouldn't be. This is for you and you alone to decide. We urge everyone at all times to check the sources and believe no one. You need to come to your own conclusions, and hopefully this will be based on as good information as possible. Then at the end of the day, people will have different opinions, and that is okay. We can still exchange ideas with one another and treat each other with respect while doing so. Alex Putney from HumanResonance.org is back with us today on the program to discuss extraterrestrial and prophetic messages about 2012 and the high resonance change and transformation that humankind and our planet might be facing in the next few years. We'll be discussing the next magnetic reversal, giant skeletons found in Ecuador, Betelgeuse going supernova and being actually visible from the Earth in 2012, purification of water and physical alchemy, a scientific experiment that now is taking place in the United States by a Dr. Joe Champion, and he's allegedly managed to transmute copper, lead, and I think other metals into precious metals, such as silver, gold, and platinum. Stay with us for two very interesting hours with Alex. We offer both hours for free if you want more and have full access to our archives. You can sign up for a membership. Welcome back, Alex Putney. It is good to talk with you again. You're currently down in Ecuador. You're back in Vilcabamba doing small group gatherings and talks. How are things for you down there, Alex?
Well, they're going spectacularly. I was here just a few months ago, 3 months ago, and did a presentation at the Newtopia conference, which went beautifully. And upon returning this time for another 3 months stay, I've been able to get the video from that presentation and hope to have it up on the internet any day now. And it's a 2-hour and 40-minute presentation with over 150 slides. So I'm excited to get that out to the world. And it's really beautiful connecting with everyone down here in this great energy. And I will be inviting people up towards La Mara to do a visit up there as well.
All right, excellent. So is that the main reason you're down there, to do a little bit of talks, or are you continuing some of the research on many of the things that you've been writing about, specifically related to La Mara, of course? But again, there's so many other areas in Ecuador that are, you know, highly interesting, to put it that way.
Yeah, it's really fascinating to keep traveling around this country because, and as well, Peru, I'll be heading there pretty soon. There are so many different things, and they all do deeply connect with all the ancient sacred structures, which are well known. And there are underground sites all over the area where people are practically leaving things in the ground because they don't have the money to excavate them properly. For example, I've heard of even a mastodon, a mammoth, being discovered in the Loja area, which is the same area of Ecuador where the giant human bones were found. Yeah. Of a 35-foot giant, as has been discussed with Klaus Dohna, and was at presented to the public at the Interlaken Museum exhibition of the Unsolved Mysteries at Erevan Anakin's Mystery Park. So that's certainly something that's an ongoing interest here in Ecuador. But really, my goal is not to do archaeological work so much as to help people on the ground with the information that we've derived from these findings. And I believe I have a pretty significant piece of the puzzle to explain not only why ancient people were building these structures to take advantage of a natural energy source that's moving through the pyramid structures, but also how they were using that to energize their own bodies with special water sources that are found not just in La Mana, as we discussed in my last interview, but in several places in Ecuador as well as in Mexico. And I'm going to continue my research, and that's my most interesting avenue of research, is to be able to continue testing the waters in different areas and uncovering how we can use those in combination with the pyramids now that we can understand them as a world wireless energy system that resonates with heartbeats and synchronizes heartbeats worldwide.
Interesting. So how are these giants that have been found in Ecuador related, do you think, to the electrum water that we talked about last time as well? Have Do you believe that these people have actually grown this large because of some of the energetics that is in the area, because of this water, or is this a totally, you know, is it not related in that way, Alex?
I would say the relationship is only maintained through the standing wave field of the planet, so that I believe that the pyramids certainly are much younger than some of the giant bones out there. Certainly some of the giants, I believe still there are giants existing today in, you know, very, you know, secretive locations in the, around the planet. But I think there was a time, and the giant bones in Loja particularly speak of a time when all human beings on the planet may have been on that scale. And I believe that's also corroborated by the Acambaro artifacts from Mexico, which themselves are only carbon dated to be within the last, I think Klaus Dona gave you a figure on the last interview for the age of those artifacts, but I think they're within the last 10,000 years or so, maybe 6,000 to 7,000 years old, maybe. And those artifacts depict ancient humans interacting with dinosaurs.
Right.
And I don't believe that those interactions were occurring at the time of the making of those artifacts, but I believe those were artifacts demonstrating the Atlantean knowledge passed down from generation after generation that was aware that ancient humans were giant, and that on the scale in comparison with what we know of the size of dinosaurs, that in fact ancient humans were five times as large as we are, just like the Komodo dragons are one-fifth the size today as they may have been during that epoch, during the dinosaur age. So I think that all life on Earth was experiencing much more enormous proportions because of the gravity on the planet. It was much, much greater and much different than it is today. And so my research basically puts together the concept that the acoustic resonance of the planet dictates the strength of the gravity field, which dictates the size of life forms on the planet. And I think that's very well corroborated by findings from insect life during that time as well, where we find beetles that are literally the size of little go-karts. We find, you know, dragonflies that have 6-foot wingspans, which we know today from the gravity conditions, those animals would be crushed. Those insects would be crushed. So the other amazing factor, too, is that physicists studying the blood pressure it necessary to pump blood up the long necks of what was called the Brontosaurus or Apatosaurus. That dinosaur with probably the tallest animal that we have on record, and to be able to explain how blood was possibly pumped up to the head of that animal to keep it conscious, scientists have had to come up with schemes, you know, talking about that they have 12 hearts, you know, a string of hearts in their neck to pump that blood.
Right.
You know, the calculations show that if it actually had a physiology like an animal of today, that the blood pressure would be so high that the animal's head would explode. So the physics of today cannot explain the size of those animals and the physics of the functioning of those animals' bodies millions of years ago. And I think that we can learn from laboratory experiments to prove that's the case. And in fact, on my website, I've linked to a story in the time cycle section where giant or enlarged dragonflies were created, and they're only 15% enlarged, but that was achieved through a hyperoxic environment where more oxygen was present in the atmosphere.
Right, right. Well, that's an interesting point there, because I wanted to bring up with the oxygen level, because someone measured the diameter, I think it was, of the nostrils of some of the, you know, dinosaurs, or they speculated, because we don't have the access to the actual flesh, but based on the skeleton remains, they found that in some cases some dinosaurs' nostrils wouldn't have been bigger than a cow is today, which means that for them to, you know, to bring in that much oxygen through those tiny little nostrils, that would have set the whole nose on fire, if you know what I mean, because of the friction of bringing all that up in a way. So the answer to that puzzle was obviously that it must have been more oxygen in the atmosphere overall. And some of the theories connected with that, obviously, was that something happened. We had an incredible lush environment, more of a jungle everywhere, worldwide probably, and much more oxygen as a consequence of that in the air. Now, what do you think happened there? I mean, did the resonance of the planet change because of some kind of a cataclysm, or what's your take on that, Alex?
Yeah, I definitely think that kind of effect being so drastic would be a series of cataclysms over the ages, and I would imagine that life forms on this planet have been changing in size, not just from large to small, but probably going through cyclical periods of downshifting in size and then reverting back to a larger size. And I imagine, of course, there are also conditions on this planet present at one time or another when humans were quite small. So obviously, looking for human bones, we tend to look on our own scale, because the conception of most archaeologists is that if they're, you know, for example, like the bones of Loja, five times as large as what we have in present-day humans, then there's some mistake, and this is some kind of ancient marsupial sloth or something. Mm-hmm. And, of course, that has been completely disproven by scientists who received sample bones from this collection from Loja, from the Padre Maca collection, which Klaus Dona and I had collected for the Interlaken exhibition. And seven separate scientists, I'll confirm that these were genuine human bones that were older than can be dated by radiocarbon techniques, and that in every case they independently stated a size difference of exactly five times as large as modern human. And I think one of the other interesting details that came up in that in those studies was that the conformation of holes, if you take a slice through a bone, for example, the femur, within the interior of the bone, there are vessels for marrow and blood movement, and those vessels have a particular structure based on the metabolism of the type of animal or human being studied. So, you know, carnivores, herbivores, omnivores all have different structures in those bone holes, and as well the human anatomy or the human metabolism also has a completely different structure than all animals and all carnivores. So that was also conclusively shown in the bones from Loja, which for me is really powerful evidence. It's not just looking at the shape of the bone, but it's looking at the internal metabolism of the being that was growing those bones. And that's very conclusive data. And of course, you know, the age, these bones also had quartz growing on them in thick layers. So that, you know, definitely confirms that these are very ancient bones, certainly more than 50,000 years and quite likely hundreds of thousands of years.
Mm-hmm. Wow. And do you remember now, recall the nature of the find? Because I can't at the moment recall if this was it in a cave, or was it simply in the ground that somebody dug into it? I can't remember that, Alex.
Yeah, I was there with Klaus when we visited the site, and as he described in his last discussion with you, and it was apparently there was more than one skeleton originally found in fragments, and they were all on the hillside, a sloping hillside that we got to revisit and investigate and take photographs of, although further excavations are on hold, obviously.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, well, in itself, that is it's an incredible discovery. It's an incredible story, obviously, that whole thing in itself. But we don't only have you here to discuss that, of course, because there's many other things now that have been unfolding. And I think that some of the things that our listeners were probably most intrigued with the last time we had you on was the whole Beetlejuice Twin Suns 2012 whole story. And we can obviously leave it up to you of where you would like to go, because we also want to mention and bring this out that you've uploaded your books to the website in PDF format for free. Lightwater is the most recent one, and that alone is a couple of hours, if not even tens of hours of discussion. There's so much information in there. But where would you like to go, Alex? We have so much to discuss here.
Well, I think that's a great direction to head in. I definitely have a lot of information that I was having to hold back during our last conversation. So I think what I'll do is start with a quote, and then it'll lead us in the right direction, because essentially what I do in my latest book, Lightwater, is provide information from separate sources that I find completely valid in terms of the information that they've given that is verifiable at this point, because obviously every day that goes by, we can verify more and more of what we've been told concerning future prophecy and future events. And so with this track record in mind, I'm assembling information that comes from different sources that were not in contact with each other, and yet give us tantalizing suggestions about aspects connected with the shift of the ages and the events of December 22nd, 2012. Mm. So I think what I'll go is just chapter by chapter, I will read the hardest-hitting information from these sources, and we'll just start at the beginning of the book and proceed. I've got a list here of about 7 quotes that I think are totally in line with each other as giving us a clear description about these events.
Okay, excellent.
So I guess I'll start. Maybe the first one I will give is from contacts with extraterrestrials that took place in Durban, South Africa, and in Natal and other areas in that region in the 60s and 70s, and probably are ongoing to this day. Nothing has been published in the last decade and a half from this contact case. And the contactee has been named Edwin, and that's an alias, so I don't, you know, won't speak much about him. But the information he was given was from a contactee from a planetary system called Caldas, and they belong to a confederation of 12 planets. And the visitor, the contactor's name was Valdar, and he explained some really fascinating things about the New Age. So I'm quoting right now from a book written by Carl van Vlierden, which gives direct quotes from conversations with this contactee, Edwin, who was a different person. Mm-hmm. Valdar continued with his explanation. I have used the word conditioning in, he's speaking about his interaction and giving information to humans, and this information, and as well as the subconscious information, is preparing humans for this big shift. Another aspect of this conditioning program emerged with the discussion turned to the enigmatic subject called the New Age. Valdar said, one has to be conditioned to accept the New Age. In the ancient scriptures of the Confederation, it is written that the Divine One will change many planets. A voice tells us that there will be a change. The timing of this event will depend on many circumstances. It might be caused by the separation of the two universes, resulting in a complete break in the magnetic field between them. This event may bring about changes which would gradually usher in a new age. There might be a change in the atomic structure. Every atomic power station would then cease to function, and even your electrical power would stop, but a new source of energy will then be available. Your physical world would undergo a transformation, a cleansing of the earth. Then the resurrection would follow in the still of the night. This transformation would be almost instantaneous. Even the heavens would change color. Mankind will be afraid, but a great uplifting will follow. There will be regeneration. For example, those of 90 years will be as 50, and those of you who are 50 will be as 30. Many would not see these changes. Only those of you who can now accept a new way of life will perceive it and experience it. Many are now being conditioned for that day, and also for cosmic flights, should that become necessary. Your subconscious mind is being conditioned to prepare for such an event, should it arise. Then, as if with the turning of a switch, true understanding would come. Some of you may become teachers or leaders. Valdar also mentioned again the disturbance in the magnetic fields, which, although unobserved by astronomers on Earth, caused an insurmountable barrier to all magnetically propelled spacecraft. This disturbance came to an end on the 18th of January, 1981. Valdar continued, once the magnetic disturbance of the December solstice of 2012 occurs and the magnetic fields return to normal, then there could be a radical change on Earth. When the changes come, and come they will, the rotational direction of the Earth will be the opposite of what it is today. It would take the planet quite a while to readjust itself, but it will do so, for the Earth is still a very young planet. These things happen to young planets, and they must happen before your sun becomes unstable and turns into a supernova and burns everything out. But there are still many years before, many millions of Earth years before that event. But then there is the possibility that the Earth may turn into a ball of fire as a result of a nuclear war. However, I feel that these changes, some of which I mentioned, will come before mankind on Earth can perform such a deed. Let us wait and see. There are still many things that even the Confederation is uncertain of. Changes can be observed and data analyzed, but only Mother Nature, the Divine One, will trigger the reaction that will change things permanently. I repeat, permanently on Earth.
Interesting. Contacts. This was related to contacts that began in 1968, right? South Africa, I mentioned.
Correct.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay. Huh. What's your take on that, Alex? What do you think? What does he mean when he mentions, in that sense, conditioning? You know, to enter into this new era, new age, basically. What does that mean to you?
Well, I think the whole program of creation provides us with environments for conditioning, and the whole shift of the ages implies that the creation is providing a different conditioning environment for us. And so it's certainly a natural shift and a natural program, and I believe these extraterrestrials are so in tune with the natural flow of energy through the cosmos that they're so aware of this change that they're coming here to offer their own conscious messages concerning this natural shift for us. And a few of the quotes, a few of the lines within those quotes they give have really deep meanings, which are passed off as almost metaphorical, because those same statements are heard within human culture so clearly and deeply throughout the world. One of those is he says that the resurrection will follow the still of the night. And I think that reflects what Mayan elders speak about there being a period of 30 hours of, or more of darkness as we transit through the across the ecliptic plane of our galaxy. And so that they describe the rays of the sun not shining, and the Mayans do. And I believe that this is what is being referenced by Baldur here when he says the resurrection will follow, and it will be not just a night of a normal, you know, 12 hours or 8 hours or whatever, but it will be a 3-day period of darkness that will be the long night, and that the resurrection will come because of a blast of energy that will end that period of darkness and will literally be igniting an invisible sun very close to us that's the binary twin of our sun. And that concept is also spoken about by Baldur in other discussions, and they really describe the presence of what they're calling Sola Kananda, which is their term for a sun that has not yet blazed. What's their term? Let's see here. Kind of like a nascent sun. Mm-hmm. And I'll read that quote here quickly too. The approaching embryo sun, Sola Kananda, is involved in this programming. We first heard about Sola Kananda approaching our solar system in 1973. Sola Kananda means a sun that has not yet flared or blazed, we are told. It is approaching from the constellation of Cancer. As our solar system enters deeper into its sphere of influence, changes in our magnetic fields have from time to time been observed by the Confederation. So this concept they're presenting speaks about an embryo sun that I believe the dark night will, the end of the dark night with this blast of energy coming from the core of our galaxy, will reignite a binary twin star of our own system that has been an enigmatic missing partner for hundreds of thousands of years.
Right, right. The brown dwarf or whatever it is that is the possible companion. Now, do you believe that that is something that is then in our solar system? There's other theories that it's actually, again, then on a wider elliptical kind of orbit, and it's not actually close to our solar system right now. What do you think, Alex?
Well, I definitely believe that the brown dwarf has already penetrated through the Oort cloud, which surrounds our solar system, or what we think of as being the extent of our solar system. And so I believe that all the cometary we have, the cometary activity that we have throughout our solar system right now is attributable to that. We have scientists seeing meteor strikes all over the moon. There are flashes. We have them all over Jupiter, all over Saturn. You know, every few weeks you hear a new event happening, and sometimes, you know, even took a few a week. And, of course, we've heard of sonic booms in our atmosphere from meteors striking. We've seen actual footage of meteors being caught all over the world on police car dash cams, on people at football games sitting there in the stadium capturing it with their camera. It's just phenomenal, the number of cometary incidents occurring on our planet, and I think that's directly related to and can be called as a phenomenon the Oort comets, because these are, I believe, cometary matter from the Oort cloud surrounding our system that the binary twin of our sun, the brown dwarf, has literally knocked through, has been like a bowling ball through those pins and created a totally chaotic scattering of these cometary bodies. And that's a perfect segue to read a quote on that very topic from another contactee who's probably one of the most famous in the world, Billy Edward Meyer,
right,
from Switzerland. So I'll just jump into that. He directly references this concept and speaks about it in the context of the Mayan calendar. And so this is a longer quote as well, but I think it's pretty profound and connects the dots in a spectacular way.
Okay, excellent. Go ahead and read that. And then also, Alex, later on, after, I want to ask a little bit more about the magnetic field comment that was made in the previous one. But go ahead with Billy Meyer here, and we'll talk about that later.
Okay. So this is from a quote from his conversation with extraterrestrials from the Pleiades star system that took place on February 3rd, 2009, which was his 72nd birthday. So Meyer is in conversation with an extraterrestrial named Ptah, and Meyer begins questioning. Regarding the Mayan calendar, it must be said that in the year 2012 will bring a whole series of quite special events, and our sun will contribute to them because on the sun's surface enormous eruptions will occur and solar storms are caused, which will be very intensive and will influence Earth's geomagnetic balance. The Earth's magnetic field can suffer very strong fluctuations through the very strong X-ray radiation falling down on it. And through such geomagnetic storms, power grids and all electrical appliances can collapse, thus also those in satellites, and the ISS can also suffer great damage and can even fail completely. Such solar storms can lead to enormous natural catastrophes and, in the worst case, to a polarity reversal of Earth's magnetic field. What also has to be said is that such solar storms form to a climax in an exact rhythm of 11 years, which is normal, but in the year 2012 it can happen in an extraordinary magnitude. Earth will come under a very strong bombardment of hard radiation, which can have very negative effect on the Earth's ozone layer. Due to the entire resulting process, nitric oxides and acid rain can form worldwide, which may have bad and devastating effects on the entire plant world. The enormous solar eruptions can lead to further very strong climate changes and, with it, to immense droughts, bad weather, volcanic eruptions, earthquakes, crop failures, and therefore to even greater famines than have existed up to now. In addition to all this, the year 2012 brings other unpleasant events, such as so far an unknown, invisible, dark, and huge space wanderer that is threatening from the fringe of our solar system and could wreak tremendous havoc on Earth. And if this should really occur, the fact of its existence would be openly proven starting with 2010 or 11, if at all, because the possibility of a dark and therefore non-observable passage of the Colossus is also possible. Aside from that, all kinds of unpleasant machinations regarding unpeace, worldwide heavy warlike actions, as well as increasing degeneracy and excessive human ways of behavior are threatening for the year 2012. Now, here's the interesting part with the extraterrestrial comment. Ptah states, "You should not say more because what you explained should be enough. Regarding the Mayan calendar, the 21st of December 2012 represents the culmination of a star constellation alignment that only occurs around every 26,000 years. The Mayan calculations are assuming that Earth, on the 21st of December 2012, shall lie on an imaginary line that joins together the star Betelgeuse above the left side of the constellation Orion with the central sun situated at the center of the Milky Way. The sun meets the Milky Way at a location that is built by interstellar dust clouds and is called the dark cleft of the Milky Way by the human beings of Earth. On the 21st of December 2012, at nightfall of winter solstice, the sun is directly in that cleft, and it is in such a position that the Milky Way covers the horizon in all positions all around. Thereby, the optical impression is produced that the Milky Way would touch Earth all around and that the galaxy would lie directly on the Earth. On the whole, that's the end product of the Mayan calendar recording. This should suffice, my friend. To say more would be too much, because it would only foster the fear of human beings of Earth, which should not be, however. So keep silent on all the further explanations we have given you.
Pretty interesting. So I mean, obviously, at the beginning here of this comment as well, this is related to just what I wanted to discuss a little bit about the magnetic field. And the previous comment, the Sola Kananda, or the Valdar comment that we talked about, he mentioned there was something about the magnetic field stabilizing again. Was it in 2012 at the winter solstice, or when was it?
Well, he says that event, I think he's talking about the crossing of the ecliptic plane, mm-hmm. is when we're in a field of null magnetics. So basically it's like shields down, which is why Billy Meyer's speaking about all this radiation coming through at that time.
Right, right.
So I believe that as we move through the galactic plane is the exact moment of polar reversal. And people, you know, a lot of scientists who have never witnessed polar reversal are saying things like, well, this could take hundreds of years or thousands of years. Well, we have direct evidence from statements from beings who allegedly have witnessed this event happen in solar systems across the cosmos. And they tell us that this happens in a very rapid time when the magnetic field breaks as we cross through the galactic plane, and that as we emerge on the other side, we have during that event, we have the reversal of the magnetic field. And just like any torus, or any magnetic field, you have a north and a south pole, and as soon as you move from one to the other, there's a threshold that you cross where you have a null field, and that's the zero point. That's exactly what we're going through.
Right, right. Well, exactly. And I mean, there is even physical evidence for this. We had Robert Felix with us recently talking about magnetic reversals, and there is evidence of this at Steens Mountain in Oregon, and the evidence here points to the fact that a magnetic shift reversal happened under 30 days, actually. So, again, we're not talking about hundreds and thousands of years here, but a very, very quick, you know. And again, this is just an estimate on in terms of what we can be able to, you know, track and so forth as well. But the speculation here was in around 30 days. So, absolutely, I think you're right, Alex.
It's going to be fascinating. I think it's all going to be panning out within our lifetime, certainly. And that's why we're all here, I believe.
So, very interesting. What can you say? How can you tie this into some of the latest discoveries or even in some regards speculations about the ongoing magnetic reversal right now? Then we can see weakening of the magnetic field right now. We can see it speeding towards Russia about 40 miles per year at present. I suspect this might kick up at any point, and some people even say that the reversal is happening right now, basically, in that sense. Do you agree with that, Alex?
Yeah, I do. And I think that, you know, when we look at an exact date for it, everyone questions how we could know, or how the Mayans could know, or how the Mayan ancestors could understand this event to be involved with a specific date. And my understanding of that is that the Mayans explain their knowledge has to do with understanding galactic waves that cycle as pulsations emitted on a regular rhythm from the center of our galaxy, from a giant central star. And that's exactly what is suggested or implied when Patah is explaining to Billy Meyer that the Mayans are calculating their calendar date based on the Earth moving through an imaginary line that joins together the star Betelgeuse with the central sun. And I believe that they're referring to indirectly there to the synchronization of events where the energy wave that's pulsing from the center of our galaxy is actually setting off supernovae one after another in a long string as it expands from the central sun, and that Betelgeuse is the nearest supernova in that string of events that's going to be hitting us, and that we can use that as our marker to understand this greater energy movement in a cyclical way from the central sun.
Hmm.
So I believe, you know, the fact that Betelgeuse is linked in with this scenario, as well as the Sola Kananda, the embryo sun, our binary twin brown dwarf, those two and the interaction of those two is really the key piece of information that I'm trying to put together. Yeah. Because, you know, the Hopi and Native American prophecies, which I discussed in the last chapter of Lightwater, speak very decisively of a red star appearing in our close heavens and of our skies turning red. And they speak of the new world as the red dawn, the coming of the fifth sun.
Right.
So all of these things together, I believe, are only comprehensible if you understand the connection between Betelgeuse as well as our dark star and the fact that the ignition of this brown dwarf is connected with the blast wave from Betelgeuse, which is in itself connected with cyclical blast waves from the central sun, all of which were calculated by the Mayan calendar.
So we're talking about a kind of a domino effect here, obviously, and one thing, you know, leading to the next one. And how close do you feel, or how close do you know that these things will unfold as we get closer to the end date of the Mayan calendar in 2012? Are we looking at a couple of months, days, or year? Not maybe years then apart, but months apart, or are we talking hours apart? What do you think, Alex?
I've been thinking about that question a lot, and I believe that the blast wave from Betelgeuse will hit us, and it will become obvious that it's coming from Betelgeuse because that star will be maybe 25 times its normal magnitude and appear as a large ring. Now, there have been speculation. We are speaking about Al Carter's ideas coming out of Queensland, Australia, where he's suggesting that the Betelgeuse explosion may appear to us as a second sun. I'm not of that opinion. I believe that it will appear to be perhaps 25 times larger than Betelgeuse is today, but that a second sun will in fact be appearing and making an appearance due to that energy wave hitting us, and that sun will actually be the brown dwarf twin.
Mm-hmm.
So I do believe we will have two suns in 2012, but I don't believe one of them will be the appearance of Betelgeuse. I believe there will be actually a star in our near heavens, which we'll be able to witness as a red star, likely something around the order of 50% of the magnitude of our sun.
Okay, interesting. So in other words, there is credence to that article. I will link this up for people who don't know what we're talking about here, but there was an article from the New Zealand Herald, I think it was, a while back about detailing this idea about the twin stars that could be visible from Earth in 2012. So you feel that there's something to it, but not the whole story, basically.
Yeah, I think we really need to look towards Mayan knowledge and understand their calendars and the origin of their calendars in cosmic cultures, because the Mayans literally tell us we've been given this knowledge from beings who come from the Pleiades star system. So the fact that we have corroborating information coming from extraterrestrial contacts from that region of space as well as other regions of space, all speaking about these same details, really for me, whenever I check any information, of course, I compare it with other valid sources that I've been researching, and all the truth hangs together. It resonates. And so when you have enough pieces of the puzzle, you can put them together, and they really form a resonance that excludes other pieces that don't fit. And I believe that piece about Betelgeuse being what appears to be our second star, that piece doesn't fit directly. It is a component of what will be happening, but I believe that there will be a much more dramatic appearance in our skies. And people are certainly on the right track. The energy from a supernova, if Betelgeuse is exploding, it's, you know, on December 22nd, 2012, optically by our perception, that means it's roughly 640 light years away. That means that actual explosion did occur sometime in the 1300s. So that connection is one I'm researching further, and I'm working on another book that will be explaining some of the, for example, the Maunder minimum, some of the solar activity that has not been understood, and some of the energies that were coming in the 13th century from this blast wave that were instantaneous, superluminal waves that were affecting our planet, and that the optical wave that will be striking us on December 22nd, 2012, potentially, is the big eye-opener that will allow us to pin down this influence that we're seeing all around in the shift of the ages everywhere. We see it in human consciousness in all of the planetary systems, including all animal life, all meteorological systems. They're all in shift, as well as every other planet in our solar system, as researchers like David Wilcock and others clearly explained, Richard Hoagland. So, yeah, definitely the waves of energy are already influencing us, and it's simply going to be an announcement for all of humankind as to the source of that energy, and will hopefully echo ancient knowledge and show that we have not lost the wisdom that we were entrusted with so long ago.
So you're saying the initial effect probably was happening, or we were feeling that in some way back in the 1300s. Can there be any evidence for this? Do you think that any of the effect, the initial blast wave that might have reached us that early, could be? Can there be any evidence on the physical level on this planet for that? Do you believe, Alex?
I'm sure there is. Whether we can tie it together coherently and succinctly is another question. So I'm looking to find big pieces and put them together. And certainly the work of researchers like Charles Fort, who there's a magazine which was promoting his ideas after his death called Fortean Times.
Right.
Magazines like this include so much data that points towards the effects of constellations and energies. They've seen in explosions in constellations at various times in the past, with earthquake activity and atmospheric auroras on Earth. And that's certainly connected with what has happened in, for example, in Chile during the latest massive earthquake in north central Chile that, you know, people described and actually videotaped on YouTube. I saw a recording of auroras in the skies over that earthquake epicenter. Yeah. And so these stories go back so far that, you know, a lot of people are pointing towards HARP as being a culprit, and
sure,
that's possible.
Sure.
But these stories go back hundreds of years to the point where we know that even natural earthquake activity does involve auroral activity overhead as well.
Earthquake light, a rainbow-like color, translucent, kind of appears over the area that is going to be, you know, affected by this. And that's one effect. It happened over China as well, I think, in the recent big one over there.
Exactly.
So that's interesting, and again, we don't know if this, you know, if it is natural or if it's HARP related. It will have to remain, you know, a question mark around that for the time being. But we've had some other interesting things happening, like sinkholes. There was a couple of big ones over in South America not too long ago as well, connected to this bigger overarching event as well, do you believe?
Definitely. And I think all of the displacement of matter that humans have caused, you know, by the damming of waters and the mining processes, subterranean blast testing, Billy Meyer very clearly elucidates all those connections as being direct, or the removal of oil from the ground certainly as well being directly involved. And I think a lot of people understand that today, and that's not such a huge mystery, although,
that's right,
you know, the infrasound field is what's stimulating these changes, and I think that's something that all of these people speaking about these topics are missing. And that's the piece I hope to give to the puzzle, is that the invisible effect which connects not only the pyramids worldwide, but connects one earthquake event with another one,
mm-hmm,
is directly related to terrestrial infrasound standing waves. And that literally when we have earthquake zones like Nazca, the Nazca lines and Nazca plate interaction, where we have megaquakes going on near Lima, Peru, and south of there, that location is pretty much on the opposite side of the planet, just dozens of miles away from the epicenter of events happening in the Sumatra area with the Indonesian tsunami in 2005 and all of the megaquakes since then.
Mm-hmm.
So what we have is, on my website, I give earthquake pairs in a few different stories where I show, and not in any of the major events is it really obvious, but in a few events there are exactly antipodal earthquakes, antipodal meaning occurring on the opposite side of the planets from each other, and that these events have to be linked because of the time it takes for sound waves to travel from one event and then reconverge at the same intensity at the other side of the planet to cause another event.
While we're on the topic of, you know, apocalyptics in one way, the massive birds and fish die-offs that have been happening lately, related as well, do you believe? I suspect some kind of magnetic interference. Again, people are eyeing HARP or other HARP-type facilities around the world. What do you think, Alex?
My feeling is that the temperature changes alone that we're seeing are so extreme that in itself could easily account for what, you know, the vast die-offs that we're seeing, the mass bird deaths, the mass crab deaths, octopus deaths, fish deaths. You know, these things have not just been occurring in January 2011. These have been occurring for, you know, the last dozen years on and off, and it's obviously culminating. And I think in a way that cannot be attributable to HARP and things like that. And I don't think it's too mysterious what is caused or is not caused by HARP, because people do monitor those facilities, and they literally go from being off to being switched on, and it's so noticeable that people all around the world can measure it. So I think events like the Haiti earthquake, on my website I present the HARP data that show that HARP was active for exactly 2 days before that event and stopped right after the event.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, you know, we do have very clear indicators that certain events are artificially created. But, of course, they're working within the natural magnetic fields of the planet to manipulate them. So these are certainly events that solar flares could also have caused. And it's just a question of time. You know, the fault lines that can be influenced artificially are also ones that are being influenced all the time naturally as well. And so, no, I don't think we can account for even 2 or 3% of the intense change in weather activity that we're witnessing. You know, less, you know, maybe a couple percent can be affected by the HARP systems, but I'd say most of it has to do with, you know, straight up climate change that's easily measurable. Cold. It's getting cold.
That is correct. Absolutely. And, I mean, obviously, they are doing tons of experimentation with HARP and so forth as well. And yes, that is ongoing. But I also see, just as you say, Alex, it's become a kind of a magic bullet of sorts in the conspiracy field. It's blamed for everything now. And there is natural things happening in the universe as well. And there's natural energies that are coming in, shifting things. And I think that to attribute it all again to man-made technologies is erroneous as well, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, there's certainly a combination of factors, but you'd have to say even the insanity of human beings to develop a system like HARP and use it as they do is simply a reflection of the natural changes as well, because all our brains, the thought wave patterns that we're experiencing right now are in flux, and the magnetic fields that we're subjected to are in total flux right now. So I think that that's, you know, I don't really believe that man is not a natural force. I think the stupidity of man is certainly the result of natural forces, and it's part of our learning cycle.
Right.
You know?
Well, go ahead.
My main conclusion that I draw in several of my books is that really this period where human beings have existed in this low resonance on Earth, or what we might call the Dark Ages, this period has been a learning experience where an environment has been created for us where we cannot see auras. People can come up to you and lie to you, you know, the average person, and they don't have the intuition or the psychic ability or the aura reading ability to determine, you're lying, you don't even believe what you're saying. And that's exactly what I think is going to change in 2012, is that once the consciousness level is raised the bar, then all of a sudden you don't have the same capacity for any of the dark, dark things that happen on this planet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for example, I think about some of the lowest moments in human history and human conduct. We have things like, you know, slavery and satanic worship, cult sacrifice, and more significantly, I think, generational abuse, you know, sexual abuse of children and them growing up and repeating that on their own children. And I think that psychopathic families on Earth right now are caught up in these cycles of abuse, and it's really just, you know, receiving and giving abuse. It's not, they're not creating the abuse, they're just transmuting it and passing it down the generations. And I think those really psychopathic cycles of torture, really, are not going to be possible and cannot be hidden from any group of people, any community in the future, especially communities that are living barefoot, living in the heartbeat resonance, using sacred waters. And the sensitivity of beings on that level of consciousness completely denies the ability for lies to penetrate, you know, and to subvert society, as has been the case, the status quo, for thousands of years.
Yeah.
You know, my initial understanding of the pyramids was totally falsified by the stories of psychopaths telling us that the pyramids were built by psychopaths enslaving whole nations to build them pyramids. And that's simply not the case. Yeah. That is a vision of psychopaths that they would like to install in our consciousness. But the reality is that these buildings are ancient, amazing psychoacoustic structures that were not built to glorify any one being, but were built to uplift all of humanity up to a telepathic level of consciousness. And that literally when these buildings were in full function, that heart resonance, there was no lying, there was no heart sacrificing going on. All that was later, after the fact. The heart sacrifice is literally speaking about karma and about in the genuine Mayan tradition, the ancient tradition that links back to the Atlantean source of all these pyramids around the world. That tradition, heart sacrifice, is meant as a metaphor for sacrificing your own desires in the karmic sense, because that is what keeps you in the forest of limitations from achieving bliss and achieving enlightenment. Well, and so I believe that to finish that statement,
yeah,
and to be really strong about it, you know, the books and movies like Mel Gibson's Apocalypto, these are specifically programming people to deny their own heritage. You know, worldwide, every culture of the world has a heritage of using these pyramids, and every culture has been subverted by psychopathic belief systems. And those are going to fall aside as 2012 reignites our pyramids and people start doing heart sacrifice in an internal way and internalizing all of the energy that they would like in their life and charging their body with powerful energy waters. Now that, to me, is going to be the change that signifies the new world.
Absolutely. Very, very good points there. And I think you're absolutely right in terms of the literal, you know, interpretation in many cases of many of these metaphysical stories. It also shows, you know, a people that have walked away from the true message, either because of the fact of these things that we talked about earlier, Alex, that they have actually lost connection to their consciousness because of the surrounding, you know, properties of the environment, of the planet, and so forth. But, I mean, it's the same way as with Christianity, as the church, you know, comes from a perspective of love and giving and caring, basically, to be, you know, simple about it, to an establishment that have subjected people around the world to mass genocide in some cases. It's that same schizophrenia. And obviously, as well, as you say, I think it's a given that these people, the psychopaths at the top, also project their own motives on things that they don't understand. So when they speculate, why would they create such a thing? Well, it's tombs for, you know, the pharaohs in that sense. It's a royal funeral in that sense. That's all what it's all about. But in any regard, I think it's interesting what you mentioned there about the fact that if consciousness is raised on everybody in that sense around the planet, that will immediately form a kind of the best intelligence, you know, community. And if people are aware of their surrounding, the people that they work with, a lot of the dirty, filthy corruption that is going on right now would be actually impossible at that stage if people actually were just aware of their immediate surrounding, unless mm-hmm. they closed themselves off in one sense. But so are you saying then that we are looking at a situation where we have a consciousness level that will be immediately raised, no matter how you've spent your previous, you know, life on this planet? Or are we all going to be given this gift of you know, enlightenment or raised consciousness, Alex?
Well, that's a very profound question, and I have to answer that by asking, who is going to choose a natural path?
Right.
You know, that is the answer, because in my mind, anything that's toxifying the body, you know, the mercury, the chlorine people are drinking and showering every day, you know, the water in your body is your temple. And how you look after your temple is going to exactly reflect how you can handle the conditions coming in 2012. So when I speak with people, I recommend they take metal out of their mouth, they meditate and try to focus their biorhythms into a synchronization with the planet, and finding places to do that using my maps and the information I provide as far as hotspots are concerned. And my feeling is that beings like psychopaths don't even value their own life, let alone nature. You know, they don't recognize the power of nature, and they don't see the depth of freedom allowed when you use nature's systems. So when I look at the future and I think about what can potentially happen with this high resonance change, I don't see, you know, all of humanity being upgraded up to a higher consciousness level, because I understand all that to be related to the quality of the temple in your body and a choice. And I also really believe in the fact of reincarnation. And in my own books, I've written about my experiences there and spoken pretty clearly about the history of research, which is suppressed, which shows thousands and thousands of cases from which we can draw parallels and show, you know, what the creation is doing with reincarnation, how this works. There are so many examples. And I think my case is certainly one of the extreme examples that people can look at and will hopefully benefit many people, not just for therapy for myself, for releasing past life issues, but of course for helping everyone see how we're all dealing with the same issues here, because we're all in this boat together and it's all changing very rapidly. So, you know, when I think about people escaping the dangers of Tesla's AC currents that were strung all over everything everyone uses, you know, that to me is my goal in a lot of my work, is to say, yeah, we have giants around the planet. These are all realities. We can go spend money digging up these bones and learning about our past. But if we learn the lessons that we've already understood from understanding the gravity changes and the different epical cyclical changes that occur, then we need to wake up to the coffee and realize that archaeological digs is a waste of time right now. And we have literally 680 something days left before this major cosmic event that is coming down the pipe at us. And we have a choice. Everyone now gets to make a choice, and all the prophecies and all the, you know, purification day stories describe that choice, where, you know, I see two types of people making two types of choices. I see fully souled, conscious human beings who are acting in awareness of the earth and listening to the Mother Earth, making good decisions and walking away from metals that are burning. You know, cars, I've got on my website stories of these hotspots where acoustic energy is building that are indicators of what will happen planet-wide when these amazing energies are unleashed here. And my conclusion from all of that data is that power lines, anything metal is going to get hot in certain places and ignite plastics on them. So, you know, plastic wiring is igniting. There are places where curtain rods are igniting on fire and are igniting the curtains hanging from them, which are flammable. The same thing with hangers igniting clothing on them. So these things are happening right now. And in the time cycle portion of my website, humanresonance.org, you can visit each of those stories and see locally how mysterious it is. And then I contextualize it with my analysis to show that this is happening in hotspots worldwide within a distinct geopositioning relationship to each other that implies the pyramids as being a source of the transduction of energy from solar flares that are going crazy right now. So that's a lot of information, but I hope people can visit my website and look at those stories, because it is profound and is happening at a place near you, near me, near everyone, and I'm tracking that.
That is indeed very, very interesting, and I want to talk about your books, mention your book titles, so the last one being Living Water, obviously. But before we
Light Water,
that's right. And before we do that, though, I want to touch upon one area, and then we'll talk about your books, your website again, and we'll proceed later on, obviously, in our member section. We have much more to discuss here. But if this is true, if this is how things will unfold, it's a major event. It's not much we can do to prevent this from happening. But as we've been talking about, or as you've been describing here, Alex, there's certain things you can do individually to prepare yourself and so forth. But overarching, you know, in big broad terms, will it be harmful? Will we all die? You mentioned areas of safety or hotspots, right? Mm-hmm. Recommendations, they're all on your website in terms of this. If people feel that this is resonating with them and they feel they want to look into this further in order to actually do something about it, is that how they would do this the best way, do you think?
Yeah, definitely. The mapping on throughout my website presents focal points of energy which people can look at in their own region and orient themselves and say, okay, here's the hotspot. I live probably 100 miles from the nearest hotspot. So if I'm going to look towards, to have a barometer in my local area, here's where I should be looking. Here's a hotspot nearby that Alex has pointed out, and let's just watch there and see what happens. Not to be running around with our head cut off thinking that we're going to have fires and all of our appliances are going to ignite tomorrow, but that we can look at these hotspots and these maps and use them as an indicator to know when we should really consider, unplugging appliances, taking them out of our house, you know, taking metals out of our mouth is something we can do right now as well. And that's good for just general health reasons as well. Metals in your mouth are not the best. So many things can be done. And I think the most important details I provide on my website concerning that have to do with going barefoot to receive electrical currents through your feet and energizing the water that you drink by including high purity water with gold and silver nanoparticles. And so if anyone is interested in looking at that easily usable, practical solution to some of these changes, they're welcome to go to the water page from the main menu on my website and read all about that, and as well as read about waters that naturally are flowing on the planet, possibly even near some of the people who are reading, that they could go partake from, and that could be a resource available to them even after 2012 if they're not able to make their own collards or buy them.
All right. And again, if we all consider that, as I personally believe, consciousness creates reality, and if we want to be the change that we want to see in the world, and all of these ideas that I think you're mentioning here, Alex, are they're not bad ideas, regardless of what is going to happen in the next year or years or so. Light Water, the latest book, you now offer, I think, all of your ebooks for free on your website, humanresonance.org. If we are downloading the books, if we enjoy them, if we want to support your work so that you can carry on doing what you're doing, Alex, how can we support your efforts?
Well, I've been so lucky to have amazing support from not only the entire universe, it feels like, all this information flowing through, but also from individuals who feel a resonance with what I'm doing. And I'm really happy to be working with several partners right now who are living in Ecuador, and we're moving on to property in La Maná, hopefully soon. And I hope to be able to invite people to be with us. But as far as donations, that can occur through people's thoughts, through their consciousness, through their meditation. That is the biggest way I can receive energy from people, and I can receive love from the universe, is by, you know, meditating and sharing that with others and receiving those energies from other people too. So, you know, if anyone would love to support, I would love to receive that in key, in energy. Send it out there, because this is real. You know, sending me dollars is, it's a nice thought, but it's very materialistic, and it's something we're moving beyond. I'm taken care of in that way. The universe is taking care of everything. And I hope that everyone can feed themselves and everyone in resonance with this energy, and that's the best way to contribute, definitely, because fear is something that none of us need if we can share the love in our hearts and share the information that we're given about what's going on now.